Earlier today, Melissa joined Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz in his office at the Pentagon to talk about U.S. policy toward Iraq.
Secretary Wolfowitz, welcome to the program.
Nice to be back.
Let's begin with Turkey's recalcitrance to having U.S. troops on its soil. How much time would you say that Turkey has? When does it become too late for an agreement on troop placement?
We've been working with the Turks for a long time, and we're still working with them. We are running out of time, but it's very important to try to get this right. The consequences are large, both for Turkey and for us. It makes a big difference in terms of our ability to deal with the Iraqi problem. If there's going to be some small chance still of either persuading Saddam to disarm peacefully or persuading him to leave peacefully, nothing would be more effective than to have him see that he's surrounded by a coalition that's ready, if necessary, to use force. And Turkey is really the key piece in surrounding Saddam Hussein.
The key piece. How complicated would it make U.S. military strategy if that peace were not in place?
Well, I suppose the other message, and this is to Baghdad, is we will win with or without Turkey if we have to. The big difference that Turkey makes is there's greater certainty, and therefore things will probably go faster. Faster means fewer consequences for the Iraqi people, first of all, which is important, and the Turks care about that. Secondly, for surrounding countries, and Turkey is one of them. Third, for the Turkish economy, which they obviously care a lot about. And from our point of view, it's easier and better on our forces. So everybody gains, including Turkey, and this is a point we've been making now to them for months. Turkey can do a lot for itself as well as the rest of the world if they will fully cooperate with us.
Turning to the United Nations and efforts at a second UN resolution on Iraq, do you see a risk in prolonged consultation at the UN level, or is there a greater risk in beginning a military campaign without the backing of the United Nations?
There are a variety of risks that a president has to balance here, and there's no question that the longer we wait, the more time Saddam has to prepare weapons of mass destruction, to prepare diabolical plans to gas his own people. We get some reports about that kind of thing. When you say acting without the United Nations, you're really saying acting in spite of a French veto, and one has to say, wait, how important is France versus how important are all the other people who are there and ready to support us, and how long do you say wait and wait and wait in the face of what is clearly open defiance by Saddam and the Iraqi regime, total absence of any serious willingness to disarm.
Well, how important is France, since you raised that question?
They have a veto in the Security Council. Beyond that, we'll have a very strong coalition, very effective in terms of the basing we need, the overflight we need, the military support that we need. I think we'll get there, and I hope at the end of the day that the French will be with us also. I think it's important for France.
Is it important for the United States?
It's better. Obviously, the more people that are with us, the better. The more endorsement we have from the United Nations, the better. But remember, 4 years ago when President Clinton went to war in Kosovo, he did not have support of the United Nations, but he had a strong coalition. He got the job done. And I would remind people, if it was worth going to war to end the ethnic cleansing in Kosovo and to deal with a dictator named Milosevic, in Iraq we're dealing with a much worse dictator who is guilty of much worse crimes against his own people.
We've been hearing concerns voiced by Arab countries about the risks of war with Iraq and an eventual U.S. occupation of that country. At the United Nations yesterday, there were envoys from Muslim countries warning of massive political instability in the region, of huge numbers of deaths and injuries, as well as refugees. How do you respond to those concerns?
Well, first of all, to say that we will do everything humanly possible to achieve the defeat of the Saddam Hussein regime with minimum casualties to the Iraqi population, and to try to, there's no such thing as a humane war, but to try to minimize the inhumanity that will result. And I think some of the fears come from, I think, probably exaggerated notions of what may happen. I think many of these governments understand that if the United States is really prepared to act, that it will be an act of humanity to the Iraqi people, that it will be an act that will bring more stability to the region, not less. We're not talking about the occupation of Iraq. We're talking about the liberation of Iraq. We're talking about the liberation of one of the most talented populations in the Arab world and perhaps the most long-suffering population in the Arab world. I get a little irritated sometimes when people say, well, we all know how bad Saddam Hussein is. Well, we really don't. I mean, I've dealt with Ferdinand Marcos. Ferdinand Marcos is a Sunday school teacher compared to Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein is in an almost unique category. And therefore, when that regime is removed, we will find one of the most talented populations in the Arab world, perhaps complaining that it took us so long to get there, perhaps a little unfriendly to the French for making it take so long.
This past weekend, there were massive protests against a possible war with Iraq around the world. How do you explain the widespread opposition on the streets around the world to this plan for a war against Iraq?
I think some of it just stems from a feeling which I share, and I know the president shares, I think everyone in the administration shares, that war is a terrible thing, and we want to avoid a war. I can't answer why people think that they should look to the United States to avoid a war as opposed to looking to Saddam Hussein to avoid a war. The decision really is up to him, and there is no question that the only way of getting him to make the right decision is to convince him that it's his only choice. If it comes to the use of force, let me just say emphatically, this is not a war for oil. There's clearly a lot of misunderstanding when you hear that slogan. If it comes to a war, the whole policy is aimed at removing what is a real threat to the United States, to our friends in Europe, and by the way, also to the Iraqi people and the people of the Persian Gulf.
Mr. Secretary, you're considered among the most hawkish advisors to the president. I don't know if that's a label you wear with pride or not. Others tilted toward a more diplomatic route through the United Nations. Now that the UN negotiations have become so prolonged, do you feel that it was a mistake to take that route, to go through the UN, and has it complicated your military strategy?
No, I don't, and there's a certain mythology around it. Somehow there were people here, for example, who opposed going to the United Nations. That's simply not true. I would say, actually, in the Defense Department, perhaps more than anywhere else, we understand the benefits of going, if you have to go use force, the benefits of having a coalition with you. And I think we understand, again, perhaps better than anyone else, if you have to use force, the benefits of having the American people with you. And having the United Nations with you is an enormous help. But what we can't do is allow a French veto in the United Nations to prevent us from defending the American people.
Secretary Wolfowitz, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz. We spoke with him in his office at the Pentagon.